And now we are going to go to the next panel on private equity. I will kindly ask Larry Rutkowski from Sweden Kissel to take over and introduce the panelists. Private equity is a very hot topic, and Larry and the panelists are going to tackle it with great success. And you have in front of you also the clock allowing you to... And by the way, thank you to everybody for traveling from abroad to be with us. One of the differences, I think, of our conference is that all the speakers of our Greek Shipping Forum come from abroad. So thank you for making the trip from New York, from London, from everywhere to be with us today.
Well, thank you. Nicholas, I think you've got a great program assembled today across the board. I think there are a lot of interesting topics that are going to be covered during the course of today, and hopefully we can sustain your interest for a few minutes as part of this process. As Nicholas said, my name is Larry Rutkowski. I'm a partner in the New York law firm of Seward & Kissel. Seward & Kissel's interest in the shipping industry is mostly from the financial services perspective, whether it's banking, capital markets, restructurings, or private investment in M&A. So we're a little bit distinct from some of the other firms that you may have dealt with over time. I think that we have a really good panel today. I think also that it's a panel that you probably wouldn't have seen at a conference like this 2 or 3 years ago, 4 years ago certainly, private equity and shipping. I think in the past it was probably considered a pipe dream and an unrealistic one. Now it is very real and very tangible. And I think there's several different reasons for that. And in a way, Nick Kunis, who just finished and gave us his views, very optimistic as they are about the world economy. I must say I feel a lot better now than I did 30 minutes ago. I think if he's right, he has indeed set the stage. A couple of things he highlighted in his presentation were the growth in the U.S. economy, the takeoff we're going to see in world GDP, but he also talked about European bank deleveraging, and I think that fits into part of the private equity story, and hopefully we'll get into some of those things. But before I do that, I want to just make sure you know all of the participants on our panel today. I've been fortunate to have worked with all of them over time. To my immediate left, your right, facing that way, we have Hamish Norton. Hamish has been in this business for a long time. I'm sure all know him. We were first introduced while he was an investment banker. He made the big move from the investment bank side of the business to, I guess you could call it the owner side of the business, but the owner side of the business with an investment banking mentality, perhaps. Hamish's company, Ocean Bulk, is well known to have been involved in several joint ventures with various private equity interests. To his left, you have Mariana Fasinotti from Sigula Guff. Sigula Guff is a very large private equity firm in the United States, probably relatively new to the shipping market. All she can tell is a little bit more about that this morning. Mariana is, and her company have been involved in some private PE ventures, and some have had a little higher profile because of what's been going on in the world. Sigula Guff was one of the private equity companies that is part of Diamond Shipping, Diamond S Shipping. As you know, there is, from published filings in the U.S., Diamond S Shipping Group will be launching an IPO. And Mariana, I believe, is on the board of the company. To her left is Bob Burke. Bob is a longtime industry participant. We chatted a little bit about how long that was last night, and we promised not to mention it today. But, you know, Bob and I, again, have known each other for quite a long time. We've had the pleasure of working together this year. Bob's company, Ridgebury Tankers, is a company that is private equity sponsored. So I think we have a very interesting mix of people and how they come to private equity and shipping. With that long introduction, I'm going to start out by a real easy question. I'm going to put it to my entire panel. I know they're probably quaking in their boots right now, but now that we're here and we're here to talk about private equity and shipping, why now? Why private equity? Why shipping? How have we gotten here? Why are we sitting here talking about this today? Hamish?
Let's see. Okay, their microphone works. I think we're talking about private equity and shipping because the private equity firms have seen how much money was made in shipping from 2003 through 2008. And, you know, before 2003, private equity avoided shipping. They thought of shipping as a very low rate of return business, a way for them to lose money, a difficult business to control once you've made your investment. You know, they're more used to businesses where picking the right management team is the difference between success and failure, whereas in shipping, timing your investment is typically the difference between success and failure. But having seen how much money was made in 2003 to 2008, you know, I think at the next opportunity to come into the market, you've seen just a tremendous number of private equity firms come in.
Yeah, I would agree with Hamish. I mean, what we have found, and we're new to the shipping industry as an investment asset class for our private equity platform, but what we've really seen is a perfect storm, which you all in this room know significantly better than I do, probably. But we've really seen a perfect storm in the shipping industry where asset valuations clearly came off as a result of the financial crisis. A lot of overcapacity, and that provided the right entry point, or provides the right entry point, sort of on a sector by sector or segment by segment basis, for the private equity industry to come in and take a look at making investments. The other thing that I would add is that private equity likes complex capital structures. Private equity tends to like asset classes that are very capital starved. And again, that's part of the perfect storm that we're seeing in this industry, where you have a deleveraging trend going on. You have a lot of different options for your investment, not only on a segment by segment basis, but within the capital structures of these companies. You have existing distressed debt, you have new debt needs, you have clearly new capital needs, and a lot of opportunity to structure debt-like equity structures or preferred equity structures as well. So the shipping industry provides a lot of different angles for private equity to participate in, and likely will for some time to come.
Good morning. My name is Bob Burke, and the one thing I wanted to say, thanks for the introduction, Larry, is you probably, well, we look like a bunch of money folks here from New York. I want to point out, especially to my Greek friends, that I spent 3 years as a ship's officer. I think it gives me a little more credibility in the room. I think the bottom line is private equity sees an opportunity to make a lot of money. When I started looking for private equity a few years ago, a lot of folks said they were structurally unable to because they can't do asset plays. But, you know, I found that as a group, they're really smart folks. And when they first started to look into our industry, a lot of us dismissed them. They don't know what they're talking about. They don't know shipping. But all the groups that I talked to spoke to 20, 30, 40 management teams, and they realized there is money to be made here. They also realized there's a lot of money to be lost, too. So how do we play this, and how do we play it smartly? And they took a lot of time to team up with what I think hopefully is the right groups, but at least make a wise choice. And then they decided a lot of them to get either close to the steel or close to the debt, and they dismissed a lot of the structures from the past. So I think, you know, the answer is it took them some time to get here, but they saw a lack of capital in the industry, and they saw a way to make a lot of money, and they jumped in with both feet. Also, they are smart, but they're like the rest of us. You know, we all think that we're counter-cyclical. But, for, you know, most of us human beings are not. We like to do what other folks do. And a lot of questions I got over time is, who else in the PE industry is in this business? And I think there's always comfort in numbers, and you don't stick out from the group. So once they started coming in, they came in with force. Thanks.
Bob, let me ask you, as the one person, well, I suppose Hamish has done it as well, but as one person who's on this panel who's had to go around and had an idea and approached private equity, maybe even knocked on Mariana's door, I don't know, what was the message that you were trying to convey and ultimately successfully conveyed to your investors about shipping? How did you get them, the private equity people, over what you saw as the sort of structural reservations to this kind of investment?
Well, first of all, it's very humbling. I probably saw 50 private equity groups, and it's like going to the dance when you're in high school, and you find the prettiest girl in the room and ask her to dance, and you walk up and she laughs at you. And that's humbling. But you have to, you know, brace yourself and ask the second girl and the third girl. By the time you get to girl number 50, you almost get halfway up to her and walk away and say, she's never going to dance with me. So it's you know, it's a long process. And I think it was, for me anyway, it was over a couple of years. So as I said, these folks are smart, and the market wasn't ready for investment. So it was a matter of me honing my story down a bit, and the market aligning with, you know, what private equity guys are looking for. So it was, and also they had to get educated. So it was a multiple of things.
Now let me turn the tables and go to Mariana and ask, what is it that you then look for when people approached you and said, we think this is something that that you should be thinking about investing in?
I think what we looked for more than anything else was actually a patient management team that wanted to work with us and really initially educate us, because shipping is, in a sense, it doesn't mean anything. Everything is about what in shipping, which asset class, which...
Maybe that was my mistake. I wasn't very patient.
Well, you certainly, not you in particular, but we needed somebody who was willing to dance for quite a while with us to get us comfortable, because, to your point earlier, we do think that it's quite easy to lose money in shipping. And, you know, we take comfort in the kind of asset level protection that you can have when you buy an asset like a vessel. But that's obviously not why we would invest in something. It's nice to have the downside protection, but it's clearly not where we're going to make our money. So it took a long time to spend a lot of time with managers, ship owners, and understand why, in particular, their strategy was going to make sense and would bring us into alignment. The second part of getting into alignment was obviously capital contributions. So we would expect, and we always expected, to be the largest share of capital in any investment that we were making. But we didn't want our investment to be a free option to our partner. We very much wanted them invested alongside us with significant capital. And if there was one obstacle that we encountered across the board, I mean, it took us 3 years of looking at various opportunities, of meeting with various management teams before we made our first investment. And the one obstacle was, by far, was the ability of the potential partner to contribute capital alongside of our investment.
Once you've made the investment, you've sorted through your options and have made the investment in an enterprise or a project, what is it that keeps you up at night worrying about what could go wrong?
There's two things, and one we have no control over, we think, and the other one we hope to exert control over. The first thing that we worry most about is overcapacity. This is very familiar to all of you here in the room, but in any one segment, private equity really is just looking to take advantage of the imbalance between supply and demand. But that picture can change very quickly, and the more specialized you become in the sector you're looking at, or the more niche of a play you go into, the more that risk really can manifest itself. with any one manager, we think we can be very aligned with the discipline of ordering or investing. But on an aggregate basis, this industry in general, like, for example, the real estate industry, hasn't been very disciplined when it's come to ordering new vessels. And so the supply-demand picture can change very, very quickly. But again, we don't think that we can have a great deal of influence on that on an aggregate basis. So to a certain extent, we're really relying on the breadth of the due diligence and investment thesis that to carry our investment. The second thing is the exit timing. Ship owners historically have held on to their vessels for longer than private equity likes to hold any company. Generally speaking, our investment horizon is 3 to 5 years, and that's pretty short for this industry. Our fund's life, for example, is a 10-year life, and we have 5 years to invest the capital and roughly 5 years to harvest the capital. So that means that, by year 3 or 4 of our investments in shipping, we need to really understand how we're going to start exiting our investment. Of the 150 or so shipping opportunities we've reviewed seriously over the last few years, I think every single investment opportunity that came our way promises an IPO exit. And there's no way that every private equity deal that got done over the last few years and it's going to get done this year and next year is going to IPO in the next 3 to 5 years. So those are the two biggest things. What that, in terms of mitigating the exit, what we really hope to do is basically get scale and get the timing right. And in that, that's where your partner is so important, because they're the ones who have the pulse on the market on a day-to-day basis.
I'd like to come back a little bit later to exit strategy, because I think it's a very important thing to talk about and very important thing for everyone here to understand. But before I do that, I want to stay focused just a little bit on the issue of alignment and how an investor makes certain or does what they can to make certain that the interests of the people that they're partnering with and their co-investor or operator or owner, their interests really are aligned. And I'd like to pick on you, if I could, Hamish, for that one, because I think some of the structures you've employed are pretty good at achieving that goal.
Yeah. Well, look, I think the interest of the private equity firms is that their management team is focused on making money for the private equity firm, and the easiest way to do that is to make sure that the management team makes money when the private equity firm makes money, and the management team doesn't make money when the private equity firm doesn't make money. So part of that is having the management team invest substantial capital along with the private equity fund so that at least the interest is aligned that way. Another aspect of that is making sure that the management team is not making a lot of money until the private equity firm makes money. So, if the management team is taking substantial technical management fees, substantial chartering commissions, substantial sale and purchase commissions, the management team is making money by having a big fleet, but not necessarily making money just when the value of the fleet goes up or the profits from the fleet are high. So private equity firms, should be and are very concerned with how the management is paid to manage the investment. At Ocean Bulk, we are, for the most part, working at audited cost in managing our joint ventures. One of the things that gave comfort to our joint venture partners that our interests are aligned. And we're investing 10 to 20% of the total capital, depending on which joint venture.
Larry, yeah, please, Bob.
I'm going to repeat a little bit what they said, but at Riverstone, it was a non-starter if you didn't have a substantial amount of your own net worth on the line and there were any conflicts. So no S&P fees, no Tesco management fees to yourself. Everything had to be third-party arm's length, or else they had no interest, because they do want to sleep at night. And they can't make the decisions on what to do every day in the business. And since that structure is set up, they for the most part, leave us alone or back our decisions, because they know that our interests are 100% aligned. And if it succeeds, the management team gets a bigger chunk of the upside. And if it fails, we lose a big chunk of our net worth. So it's a formula that most of them stick to.
I think by now you've realized that when we're talking about private equity investment in shipping on this panel, we're talking about private equity investment in shipping businesses and shipping assets. I know there's a panel later which is going to talk about distressed debt, which is probably the second largest area, if not the first, the biggest, in which private equity participates in the business. But one of the questions that's come up, and I think, Mariana, you mentioned overcapacity as a risk. You know, there's a fair amount of private equity money flowing into shipping. It may be small in the grand scheme of shipping's capital needs, but there have certainly been times in the past, whether it was the bond market of the late 90s or the IPO rush of the mid 2000s, where Wall Street was blamed for in effect helping create overcapacity by pushing up asset prices and favorable order books 1 year were not favorable order books the next. Do any of you think that the amount of investment in shipping by private equity at this point in time is enough to skew the market?
I mean, look, I don't know if it's enough to skew the market, but I have to say that the competition we see for transactions on which we're bidding is largely from private equity-backed shipping companies. We do not see, I mean, basically 60 to 70% of the competitors we run into are private equity-backed. So it's a lot of money. I don't know if it's enough to flood the market, but it's a lot.
Yeah, I would say that my sense, just given some of the numbers that I've seen, that private equity isn't currently skewing the market or contributing to building a bubble in any significant way. However, when we first started approaching the shipping segment, we were convinced that what we were going to invest in was the distressed debt of distressed shipping companies by going to the largest historical lenders to the space, some of the larger European banks, some of the English banks, and just buying up their portfolios of distressed shipping loans at 60, 70 cents on the dollar. We would feel good because we would have asset level protection, and the cycle would turn, so we'd never have to figure out how to own a vessel, and it was going to be really easy money. And the competition for buying distressed shipping loans was fierce from day one. I mean, this was 2 or 3 years ago. And that's because in general, in the distressed space, which is where most of the capital that our firm manages, in general, the distressed firms have raised a ton of capital, billions and billions of dollars, to invest in distressed loans of all types, Spanish real estate loans, Irish real estate loans, German SME loans, everything distressed, all non-performing distressed loans under the sun. Very large private equity firms have raised money to invest in that space. And shipping was a place where you could bid on very large portfolios very quickly, get scale, get your money invested, and then quickly go raise another fund to, again, invest in non-performing loans. And when we saw that, we basically decided that there was no way we could invest in distressed shipping loans at attractive levels, or at least at levels that we at the levels that we target in terms of returns. So there's a lot of very good private equity firms buying distressed, non-performing shipping loans, but we don't think that they'll make the money that that you can make if you take more an equity approach to the space, a slightly longer duration perspective to the investment, as well as really partnering with a manager who knows and has breathed and lived shipping their entire lives.
I think when the prices get too high, private equity will get out as quickly as they get in. So they may push it up, but if the prices go up too high and the fundamentals change, they'll be gone.
I'd like to circle back now to the question of exit strategy, and I'd like to talk about it in several different contexts. Maybe whatever tension that may exist between the private equity investor and the owner, probably the owner has had the longer term on their mind. There will be people who will talk later today about the reopening of the capital markets, for shipping. But certainly, the documentation for most of these joint ventures or investments provide for a lot of different contexts in which an exit strategy can be executed. How important is it that it will be the IPO market? And maybe I should start with Hamish on that one, as an investment banker, he spent quite a bit of time in the capital markets. Do you think, Hamish, the wide open capital markets are necessary to execute exit strategies from PE investments?
Well, all of our financial modeling assumes as a primary assumption that we will not have an IPO, that we will sell the ships, over a 5-year period. When we model IPO exits, the returns are higher than they are if we just sell the ships that we've acquired. I agree with Mariana that it's not possible that all the private equity-backed joint ventures can do a public markets exit. I think any prudent investor has to plan that his most likely outcome is to liquidate his fleet to get his private equity investor out. And if the investment doesn't work on that basis, it's probably not a good investment to get into.
Would either of you like to comment on that?
Sure. If you look at all the ships sold and all the ships that are sold through IPOs, if your only exit is an IPO, then you're kind of a fool. And since I earlier mentioned most of these private equity guys are real smart, they're not going to buy into that as a guaranteed exit strategy. So I'm with Hamish. You have to look at the ships and see what you can sell them for, if they revert to the mean or whatever your matrix is, and if it makes sense, then it makes sense. And if you get an IPO at a big premium, then everybody's even happier.
The only thing I'll add is that this is where who you are invested with really, really matters. If they have a track record of having sold ships, to other ship owners, to other strategics, to other platforms, that makes a really big difference versus somebody that timed the market really well and made money once before, but their only track record is using the IPO market to get out. So when we looked at the partners, among the many things that we wanted was a real track record of knowing how to exit shipping investments outside of the public markets.
I sold a shipment after my daughter before it was delivered, and I always mentioned that when I was at the PE firms. And it's true. They want to see that you can do that because so many of us get married to the assets that we never let them go.
Yeah, and I think one of the attractions to Ocean Bulk for private equity was that Ocean Bulk had a substantial fleet of ships at the beginning of 2005 and sold basically every one of them by the end of 2006 and then did not invest again until our joint ventures began in August of 2012. So I think it's correct. It's very helpful to have demonstrated that you have the determination to sell ships when the time is right to sell.
We'll probably hear more on the capital markets and the perspective of the investment bankers here today, like Jeff Pribor, Nick Stellman, and Eric Schless, on the ability to take a private equity company public. But it has been sort of a curiosity of mine, because you do, in the documentation phase, of course, spend a fair amount of time making sure that it's a viable option and who gets to call the shots and piggyback registration rights and all this sort of stuff, but I've always been curious as to exactly what story it is you tell the public on the roadshow. If your original motivation for investing in shipping was it was an asset play and you were going to buy low and sell high, are you basically telling your investors, hey, now it's high, so here it is, you run it from here when you go to the public markets? Now, in that context, if you look at the IPO strategy of a diamond shipping group, certainly going public is going to create liquidity and create a base that over time, Mariana and her co-investors can exit from. That's not what the initial IPO is targeting. Most of the proceeds, if I remember correctly, are for expansion.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, for the most part, at this point in the cycle, we wouldn't we're using in a sense the fervor that's in the shipping market to help expand all of our ventures, and that's just, you know, very simply financial engineering more than anything else. It's no magic. I think investors understand that, but that's part of why actually it makes sense to invest kind of at this stage or to contribute to an IPO that has that is in that stage of its life, as opposed to one that's purely based for exit alone. So I agree with you, Larry.
What about the prospect of M&A or consolidation as an exit? Are some of the funds that are out there that or these projects that have created, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 ship companies, could they be combined into a much larger platform to create a true industrial company?
You said a true industrial company. I don't really big believer in the value of an industrial shipping company. I think scale is very important, and I think a lot of us will sell out to consolidators, if you will, because the IPO window will get crowded or it will be closed altogether. And as Mariana said, the investment horizon for the PE groups is not infinite.
Does that mean that 3, 4, 5 years from now we won't have this panel at this this conference?
2, 3 years from now.
are there any questions out there that you people might have for this very, very well positioned panel? You've got insiders up here on this private equity and shipping discussion, so feel free. Now's the time. Don't be shy. We must have been very informative. Anybody want to offer any closing remarks? I'll try myself, but I'd like to let the experts really do it. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Put me on the spot. My experience in private equity has been good. As I said, 3 years ago we were all here or somewhere like this, and I've heard a lot of comments. Those guys don't know what they're talking about. They don't understand shipping. But I have to say, they got into the industry. They did a lot of homework. They spent a lot of time. They talked to a lot of people. And I think they've done a good job, of course, since they chose me at some point. But also, I mean, they did a good job choosing management teams, structuring things well, buying out into the debt side. And I think they'll be here for as long as there's no other money around. I mean, there's some money I know in Greece. There's some other pockets of cash. But the bank markets are really closed to any new entrants, and even to the existing entrants, they're difficult. So I think that they play a valuable role in filling a need for capital that most of us can't find anywhere else in this industry. And once the capital markets return to some sort of normal balance and the returns or the perceived returns get pushed down, I think they move on to the next opportunity.
I'll just take the other side of that and say that, you know, it's been our pleasure to work with many of the participants on the shipping side that we're working with, and they have been patient, and they have been really helpful in educating us in this space. And there's been difficult moments for making decisions in the various fleets that we're currently invested in. There are ongoing negotiations in fleets that we're investing that are raising really difficult questions for us. But so far, we've been able to come through all of these moments with I think what will ultimately be the right decisions. So we're you know convinced that we are that we've made some good investments here. The final thing that I'll add is that while private equity, from the pure sense of the word, you know, the equity infusion into this industry may be short-lived or maybe only last a couple of more years, the debt capital markets, particularly in Europe, as the high-yield market begins to expand and take a larger role than the traditional loan market, I think will be an opportunity for the shipping industry to build an even larger, more institutional capital base than it may have had in the past. And so while private equity's role may somewhat diminish over time, the growth of the high-yield market and ultimately even the strengthening of the loan market, which is probably a few more years out because Europe is obviously still delevering, will, I think, provide other types of asset managers or capital markets participants an opportunity to become more involved in the shipping asset class, which I think bodes really well for the cost of capital in shipping over the next decade or more.
The only point I would make is in closing is that I think from a lawyer's perspective, if you will, having worked on a number of these transactions over the last couple of years, translating to some degree some of the things you've heard today, is I think there's been a maturation of attitude from shipping companies in particular who have looked into the into partnering with private equity. But you really need to understand this whole concept of alignment of interest. I think you need to understand that if somebody's putting in as much money as some of these private equity companies are, you should expect that they're going to drive the process when it comes to exit strategy. And I think that's happened over time. I think the first few transactions we worked on, there were probably fairly large disconnects between the investor and the operator, because the operator was just looking as the investor as a bank. And that's not what you have in a private equity sphere. So I don't know if we're being penalized for going over our time. So I guess with that, I'll stop. I'd like to thank Bob, Mariana, and Hamish for joining me today, and of course Nicholas for putting this this panel together. Thank you all.